Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. My name is Tyler Fornes. With me, as always, is Fred, who just told me about the legend of Gator Load. Not Gatorade, Gator Load. And I got to tell you, my mind is blown.
Shockingly, it has nothing to do with alligator semen. The story, what a way to start the show, baby. So the story is that Gator Load is like, instead of Gatorade, which is an electrolyte replacement, Gator Load 280, by the way, has a number at the end, which is always foreboding for any drink, is a carbohydrate replacement. So like you're supposed to drink it instead of just pounding pasta if you're a long distance runner or something of the sort. And this was accidentally given to the, according to a Phil Jackson memoir, given to the 1997 Chicago Bulls team. The game before the flu game. And that's why he blamed them being crappy down the stretch on basically slamming pasta in liquid form during that game. So good stuff.
Amazing. The fact that you could just drink like just under a 32 ounce of this Gator Load as a distance runner and then be able to just have the same impact as it would as a carbo load of pasta.
Mm-hmm.
What a brilliant bit. Why did it go away? That's what I want to know.
I'm assuming not that many people were just casually like, well, let's carb it up.
Well, that's the one thing that, like, that should be sold in, like, GNCs, because, like, triathletes and shit.
Yeah.
All over that. But it's fascinating. I love stories like this. I mean, the fact that they made it, the Gator Load is so funny. That was probably supposed to have been the night before.
Probably.
But it is what it is. Fred, you know who should also drink Gator Load? MJF, so we could stop with these shitty ideas on television.
Oh, I got to tell you, I thought this week's Dynamite creatively, because there was a good match on there and all that, but I thought creatively it was a load, a pants load. Hey, yo. Yeah, I was really down on this Dynamite, and I thought they had done a solid enough job of building to this pay-per-view. Not great, but all right. Like, pretty good, even. But, you know, I think overall, like, it kind of felt like just another cycle. But after, like, this, I thought between that segment, the kind of the Copeland Cage kill switch segment, which frankly, kill switch is a baby face and Christian Cage and by extension Copeland are heels, is my take on that one. The kind of disappointing, like, oh, there's so much on this show. I thought it was just really disastrous creatively. And I thought, in fact, I previously said that it might be the single most self-destructively booked TV in AEW's entire run. And I'm not saying that lightly, having covered the Brochachos and, you know, like the Dark Order, infamous Dark Order beatdown at the end of 2019. This just stunk. I hated a lot of this. And it's time for, you know, we're supposed to do the heat check, but like, and the fire's lowered. But I don't know. I really did not care for a bunch on this Dynamite. And I'll get into that as part of our review of the card. But I don't know. Anything you want to add on that? Or do you just want to jump right in?
Kind of want to jump right in because why are we doing sports entertainment bullshit? It just makes me mad. This used to be a wrestling company.
If you're going to be the alternative, you got to be different. Like, that's just the deal. So
let me ask you this. What is inherently different right now between AEW and TNA other than the quality of wrestling?
I mean, I watched one of them and it's not TNA. Does that help?
Well, we watch for the quality of wrestling. That's the biggest draw about this company. But
I mean, I would say that there's really great promos in AEW too, but like the issue with this was they were doing good promos, in my opinion, with MJF and Hangman. Then they decided, well, what if we just completely undid all the booking we've done so far and also do it in a really dopey way?
Amazing. I'm just mad.
I think there's a fair bit to be mad about over this last week of TV. But well, let's jump into it. As I try to find the pay-per-view on Amazon Prime, because I was going to sneakily buy it before we got going, but apparently I can't get to it before going through the doubles finals of the Pickleball Tour, the PPA. Okay.
Hell yeah, let's go.
All right. Okay, so Forbidden Door, we are all but one collision away from it. We have no 0 hour matches, so you know that those will be announced like on Twitter to no effect by Tony Khan, because he ain't gonna change that, I guess. Jesus. Okay, so coming up on the show, we've got ourselves 9 matches announced as of now. And I'm just going to go from the bottom of the listing to the top, which does not appear to be... Yeah, they're all over the place with this. If this is an attempt at a match order projection, they have lost it, I would say. But okay, bottom match on this list is the tag team match between the matriarchy of Kip Sabian and Killswitch for... not appearing in this film, Nick Wayne, against Adam Copeland and Christian Cage. I don't know. Our gimmick is on a scale of 1 to 10. We talked about how excited we are for this match. And, you know, 10 is the most excited. 1 is not at all excited. And blah, blah, blah. I'm at like a 4 on this. Like the whole, I think I've just, there's too much sports entertainment in AEW. And that's what Adam Copeland does. So that's a tough combo for me. And I'm not hyped, but that's me. Where are you at?
I'm at a 6. I personally don't really care if they do or don't do the Edge and Christian reunion. I'm indifferent on it. I don't care. They haven't really had a tag match since like what, 2000 together? It's been like 20, 25 years. So if they do it, yeah, cool. I'm sure that we'll get something fun out of it, especially considering Christian's involved. Like, I don't care. Like, Edge, he kind of stinks. Whatever. The in-ring, completely passable. I don't ever have a bad thing to say about his in-ring, but I usually don't ever have anything great to say about it either. He's solid. He's going to give you a ton of effort. He's going to try. And he's not going to botch stuff. So, like, you're going to get a solid match. Where I'm really intrigued about this is, one, hey, kudos to Luchasaurus / Killswitch, whatever he's going to go by now, for just being alive and now back in the ring.
I liked his little their little promo video for his return. I will say that.
That was really cool. And I'm disappointed Nick Wayne's not in here, but that means we can kind of continue pushing this feud and we'll kind of see how that ends up going. But anytime Christian does something, I'm really intrigued by it because Christian is usually really good. I hate that they saddled him with the two contract gimmicks, but I thought they did a good job of getting out of both of them.
Yeah.
I like Christian and I think he's just brilliant. So I kind of want to see it from that perspective because I just like seeing Christian. But if they took this match off and said it was canceled, I'd be fine.
Yeah.
But I do think there's some intrigue here as far as a couple of the workers, how this story keeps moving along. Is Mother Wayne going to really start getting physical? Because she's always been in that valet role, but she'd get in the valet role and she'd get on like the apron, but nobody would touch her.
Yeah.
She wouldn't bump. So does that evolve as time goes on, as they're kind of splitting off from the patriarchy?
She doesn't really need a bump, but I could see her taking a bump.
I mean, she's right. Buddy Wayne's wife. She yeah. can probably take a bump.
Well, she was in
She's a
she was an indie worker, right? Yeah. She at least was a indies TV, you know, or I'm sorry, indies valet.
I like when valets are workers because then bumps feel and look more real and they don't look contrived. But I'm just curious to see if that's going to evolve. Because, I mean, she's got to be what? Mid-40s? Maybe 50? I don't know how young she had Nick. Because if she had Nick at 20, then she's only 40. Yeah. But just trying to figure that part out. I mean, it really doesn't matter, but
let's go to cage match.
If she's closer to 50, then she's probably going to be a lot less likely to take bumps.
No age listed. And no matches listed on cage match either. So there's that. I think she's really good, and I'm happy to see Killswitch come back. I'm just
according to Reddit, she was 38 when Nick Wayne debuted, so she'd be 40.
Okay,
all right. So who knows if Reddit is right? But I mean, if she's 40-ish, then I think that'd make her more likely to take a bump.
When have they ever been wrong?
Oh. Reddit. Oh, good. you're gonna get me in trouble, Fred. You're gonna get me in trouble. I personally don't care if she bumps her.
That assumes people listen to us.
That's also true. I'm very curious to see what her role continues to be if it changes, because she was the proper verbiage, like Christian Cage's muse? Would that be the proper way to say it?
I'm not sure.
She was Christian Cage's lady.
Yes.
And there's always somebody else there to take a bump, a Kip Sabian, a Nick Wayne, a Killswitch. So now that this group is evolving, are those people still going to be taking her bumps?
It really doesn't matter.
It's just a curiosity from me how they're going to grow this group. And I think that piece is a core component of that.
Yeah. Anyways, this will be like 3 stars. And I don't know. I mean,
I think we're going to get hard work from Kip Sabian is a jag, but he's going to be in front of his home country.
Not a bad in-ring guy, though.
He's a good mid-card hand. Like, this is a guy that I would have as like a jobber to the stars. Oh, we need to get Will Ospreay a match. Just give him 10 minutes with Kip Sabian, and I think you'll get something way worth putting on television.
That's higher than I'd use Kip, but, you know.
Well, you understand my point.
I understand your
point. He's probably going to work hard because it's in England.
Yeah, sure.
Luchasaurus is going to work hard because it's his first match back since nearly dying.
Yeah.
Edge and Christian are going to work hard because it's their first tag match back in 25-ish years. So, this could be like a 4-star match. It probably won't. but Buddy. I don't think it's crazy to think about, as Odie, I think, is trying to pee on a pair of pants that are on the ground.
Nope, let's have here's a chicken dinner bet. I bet you one chicken dinner for when we finally meet up in person that this will not be a 4-star match.
I don't think it will be. I think there's a chance it could be.
Okay. All right.
I'm not willing to bet on it, but I think the ceiling is like 4 or 4.25 because all these guys are going to want to work hard. And if you want to work hard, then if you have the right structure, like, it's a non-zero chance. This could be a surprise match. It could also stink. That's why there's intrigue here.
Okay, sure. I don't know that I agree that there's a lot of intrigue or anything on my part, but
I'm intrigued by a lot of little subplots rather than the entire match itself.
I'm most interested in seeing Killswitch. I let's play a game. I have looked up the last two Christian and Edge teaming together matches, straight twos, 2-on-2, which was, they took place in 2011. And it took place against the same team both times, and there is no way you are going to guess who the two members of that team were.
Which team are we talking again?
Who Christian and Edge faced in their last two previously televised matches as a tag team.
Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit.
Nope, and nope. 2011.
Oh, 2011. They wrestled together in 2011? I thought they had wrestled twice.
2011. Oh. Yeah.
Alberto Del Rio and Randy Orton.
Well, you got half of it. I was not expecting you to pull Del Rio, but there's no chance you're going to get the other half.
Dolph Ziggler?
Mm-mm. This guy has been on TV a lot, though.
I don't know.
Brodus Clay.
No way. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. But that was their last, 14 years. What we need to do is we need to get that Joe Lanza clip of him ranting about the Dudleys calling themselves the best tag team ever, or saying that they could possibly be the best tag team ever, and get an updated version of that for Christian and Edge. Edge, I think it was, calling themselves the best tag team ever. Because,
They should think that. Like, that's the kind of confidence you want, but you're also very wrong.
It's I don't know if I would have them in my top 100. I'm more likely than the Dudleys, I think, but
it depends how much you want to look at reality versus kayfabe, because in kayfabe the Dudley boys are incredibly accomplished, so I think that at least creates a different discussion when you're comparing those two teams. But we're getting off the rails. We spent almost 15 minutes talking about Christian and Edge versus Killswitch and Kip Sabian.
You sure you don't want to just talk about Gator Load some more? All right. Next up, they have listed MJF against Adam Page. Boy, I hated the angle this week. Sucked. I just hated that. It's, why in the world would it any like real fighting organization? I know, like, The whole, like, oh, that's just what wrestling is these days kind of bullshit response. But, like, seriously, this is just dopey. It's not fun. It's, you know, why would you want this, you know, on your TV? I don't get it. It's not, I didn't think it was fun. I didn't think it was enjoyable. I hate it. And I thought that it completely undermined what was a very interesting build with Adam Page outplaying MJF. And like, why is Bishop Khan going to set Mark Briscoe on fire? Like, how does that make any sense? Just dopey.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
This whole thing kind of sucks. And it's really frustrating because 2 weeks ago, like, this match felt awesome.
I missed last week's Dynamite because I was out of town, and I just watched it yesterday. And after their segment from last week, I was like, all right, this is building pretty well. I like the direction they chose with this. And then this week, they're like, what if we just completely undid all that? Cool. Great. Fantastic.
Dude, the fact that this fucking... No! Stop! Please! Yeah, great.
We've also got... we've got Money in the Bank at home, Jacksonville edition.
Yeah,
we've got Money in the Mattress in Duval.
Yep.
So like that all sucks. If these two just had a straight match, it could be like a legit match of the year contender. I think, like, it has that potential. I think it could easily hit 4.5 stars, if not much higher. But with this gimmick and with the whole, title change on DQ and count out, and also the, I don't have to use my contract thing, potentially setting up a post-match, I may have been pinned, but I'm cashing in here, gimmick. This could be really dumb. And, you know, people complain a lot about MJF's creative instincts. And I think after the Rochachos, he deserves every single bit of scrutiny he gets. But I think, you know, Tyler, you cover the Vikings. You know how the calendar works. When does the NFL start? Next week? Like the actual
September 4th is the first regular season game.
Okay, so two weeks from now. We're back. It's NFL season, Tony. And my theory is that once we get to like the preseason, once we get to football and Tony has to be making decisions about the Jaguars in particular, as well as whatever he's doing over with Fulham, this is when AEW's booking tends to get the weakest, and we're there. And I think this was a bad call by Tony. I don't think Tony gets enough criticism for some of the MJF booking. And I also think that he needs to kind of shit or get off the pot. Either you're the head booker of AEW or you're, you know, the GM of these other teams.
And you know what's funny with the Jaguars specifically? He's like an analytics guy. Like, mm-hmm. That's kind of his role. And one thing I've always wanted to ask Tony Khan, if I ever had an opportunity to ask him a question, is how he uses analytics in wrestling. And I'm not talking about TV ratings. TV ratings aren't analytic, but we already know that those get used. And if a wrestler has a couple segments that are overperforming, you're going to give them more and smarter airtime in the course of your television. I want to know if he's using analytics to figure out any other things, because there's so many ways to use data to improve your product. So I've always been really curious about that, but it's not like Tony Khan is going out and scouting, and a lot of what he does can be done virtually. I at least assume so. And it's tough, man, because this promotion felt like it was doing well. Some of the post All In directions that they had, like, I'm not one who subscribes to the fact that they just didn't know what to do post All In. I think they knew exactly what they wanted to do. It just hasn't worked. And I think those are two different things. And I think it's fair to criticize some of the directions. Like, the Darby Mock stuff seems a little murky. And now you're having, look, I love that Hiroshi Tanahashi's in a lights out cage match. That rules. But why? It feels kind of stupid and disjointed, but it's cool.
Well, at least he's from New Japan. I mean, you want to talk about how they aren't putting anyone from Forbidden Door or from New Japan on this show that is Forbidden Door? Like, they got four people. You know how many people they've had in the past?
Yeah, it was
double digits. Chris Samsa.
Go ahead.
Chris Samsa put this together earlier today, and of course my Slack is not loading correctly. There was 11 last year. Then I want to say the 2 years prior was in the 20s. Like, what are we doing here, man? Like, why, you know, we couldn't put, okay, so 2022, there are 21. 2023, there are 20. Last year, 11. This year, 4 so far. And like, this is after, oh, well, we're more involved with Stardom and CMLL, so you might get some of them, and not a single person from either. Well, okay, there's Bozilla from Stardom, but no one from CMLL.
Yes, please. Give me a Bozilla and Mercedes match. Hell yeah. That sounds tremendous.
I would not be surprised. I assume that Bozilla will be jumping to the US at some point in the next year or so.
Bozilla, Megan Bain at Joey Janela's Spring Break was probably my favorite match of WrestleMania weekend. It was not the best match, but it's so rare, like, in wrestling that you get two giants just throwing down and it just works. In women's wrestling, there are way fewer giants. Bozilla and Megan Bain, you could probably make an argument that they're the best two. Mm-hmm. And they're both pretty green. And in the same sense that giants in men's wrestling have a hard time finding their feet because they're always working down. And sometimes when the bigger you are, the more clumsy you are. I can say that from experience, being 6'6". It's very interesting to see two of them go against each other. And I thought it just worked because they were just throwing bombs and beating the piss out of each other. And I give it 4 stars. I thought it was great.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell that they both need more ring time. They both need more seasoning. But there's something there with both of them. And I thought it was really fun to see that kind of play out. And Bozilla, I think she's, what, 21? I think she's really young.
She's a baby.
Yeah. Getting her in a match like this, if she doesn't just completely train wreck it, which, being how green she is, and this isn't an insult on Bozilla, anytime you give somebody that young and green this kind of match, it can go wrong. So I'm very intrigued to see what this looks like, how this happens. Because I do think it's a fascinating one.
Yeah. Sorry, I got sidetracked there for a second. So MJF Page, I don't know, man. Like, if they don't screw around the entire time, it'll be good. If it's an MJF special, then I probably will not like it that much. And hopefully we don't get that, but I'm not very optimistic, so I don't know. You know, anything you want to add to that part of it?
Look, I really, really like the idea of Bozilla and Monet. I also really like the idea of Alex Windsor and Monet. I like the idea of Alex Windsor and Bozilla. And I think the fourth woman is Persephone, right?
Yeah, but we were talking about Paige and MJF.
Oh, we still were. I got sidetracked with the women's match. We can talk about that then. Yeah. Look, Paige and MJF had a really good match. I believe it was at Full Gear, and Paige just won. I have a feeling MJF is going to win the title, and then Paige is going to get it right back. Now, is that the smart move? I'm not going to. On the surface, no. But as I've always said with everything in this company, it's always about the follow-up. What is the follow-up to the really good or really shitty thing or anything in between? Because MJF winning the title this quickly, maybe they do that he loses and then he cashes in and then he wins because he's just butthurt and then he cheats. And then all of a sudden at All Out, we get Texas Death. Well, that could be a legendary match in the pantheon of this company.
Could be, but I don't know. We'll see how MJF-y this gets before. I'm kind of pessimistic at this point because I don't trust him. I think that we've gotten to the point where it's not a great situation, you know, with what he's doing, what he wants to do creatively. So, I don't know. That's a huge point of concern for me. I think that in general, like, they could, if they wanted to take the title off of Paige, I don't think that it'd be the worst idea ever. I think they could do that, but if it's like, I think if it's MJF winning through like a lot of very MJF stuff, then I am going to be far less interested in. I think it'll hurt. I think it will definitely hurt the product, the company that felt like it was on the right path just a few weeks ago. So pretty concerned about that. Again, this is a company that should not be doing all this sports entertainment nonsense. And unfortunately, I think that they're going to. So, all right. Next up on this card of stars is Nigel McGuinness challenging Zack Sabre Jr. for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship. Daniel Garcia will be with Nigel McGuinness. One assumes Daniel Garcia is going to be turning on Nigel McGuinness. I'm at like a 7 on this. I think this is going to be a pretty cool match. What's your thoughts?
I think this could be a really good match. I'm at an 8. I know there was a lot of discussion. We never got to talk about this. The four-way that they set up, how it just canonically did not make a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's kind of dopey.
I agree with that, but I want to counter with this because I think this is the way they went to set it up, which I think is a good one. Hey, here are our four best technical wrestlers. Now you can go face the current best technical wrestler in the world with Danielson still out. And I think that's kind of the thought process they were going with. And I kind of like that because I think it's a cool way to have a match. This is kind of like an all-star show. None of these guys are beating Zack Sabre Jr.
No.
It's just to put on a cool match and to emphasize what Zack Sabre Jr. is doing. He gets to defend the IWGP Championship in London. And a lot of the hometown fans, and this is what this match is for. This match is for Great Britain. This is for them to see their former best technical wrestler of the country in Nigel McGuinness against the current one in Zack Sabre Jr. It is a match built specifically for them. Was it gotten to in a quirky way? Yeah. Were they just trying to do something cool in how they got there? I agree. Did it work perfectly? No, it absolutely did not. But I didn't really have an issue with like, oh, Lee Moriarty, Daniel Garcia, and Nigel McGuinness being like one step away from challenging for the IWGP world title, because this show is kind of like an all-star show. They've never really treated these title defenses as quote unquote meaningful when they're cross promotion. It's to have a cool match. And some of them have been hits. Some of them have been big misses. Like Sonata and Jungle Boy.
Yeah.
But you had MJF and Tanahashi. Tanahashi's kayfabe results over the course of his entire career signal that he should get a shot at this title. But at that point, he didn't deserve a shot at the title. He had been losing like crazy in New Japan. So I'm viewing it as this is a super show. This is an all-star game. And this is a match that is humongous for the country of Great Britain. It's not for you and me. The fans are going to eat this alive.
And I'm excited for it. So
this is probably going to be the hottest the entire crowd is all night for this match.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. We'll see. I think the crowd reaction will be a reflection of what, you know, this is obviously, I'm halfway through it and I'm realizing how dopey of a obvious statement it is, but it will be a reflection of like what the current AEW crowd is like, because I think in 2019 when it first started up, you know, the typical AEW fan would have been way more into, you know, this kind of matchup, you know, very unique cross-generational once in a lifetime kind of thing. And I think that it'll be exciting. I'm excited for it. I'm really curious to see how it goes. And I am optimistic it'll be a good match. I think we're going to get a really obvious turn after the fact. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's much of a surprise either. They really do need to give a direction to Daniel Garcia. He's really been struggling. And it's about time they do something with him, man. I just wish that they get, you know, get going with it.
Yeah. This could be a good new direction for Daniel Garcia, and for that, I'm excited.
Mm-hmm.
Look, this match was gotten to specifically for the crowd, and then they did the four-way to kind of have that cohesiveness about, hey, it's just going to be a great technical wrestling match for the country, essentially. So let's have four really good technical wrestlers. I accept any argument that says that's the wrong way to do it. I just don't care that much. I think it's fine.
Yeah. All right. Coming up next is Hiromu Takahashi challenging Kyle Fletcher for the TNT Championship. I think this could steal the show. I think there's going to be like the right amount of Don Callis taking cheap shots kind of interference, and not like the MJF. Oh, there's all this storytelling on top of all this. So I'm quite excited for this. I think there's a pretty good chance this could be the best match on the show. I'm going to go at a 9 out of 10 on this. Your thoughts?
Yeah. This could rip, man.
Yeah.
It could absolutely rule.
100%.
Like, I'm excited for it. I'm also at a 9. I want to see this. This is the kind of thing that Forbidden Door is built on. Cool ass matches that you probably never ever get to see. Mm-hmm. That it's like, it kind of sucks that Hiromu's losing, but they don't view Hiromu as a heavyweight, and this is obviously a heavyweight in Kyle Fletcher, so I just don't think they care that much.
Well, I mean, Hiromu's also not going to hang around in AEW that much either. You know,
well, I think like New Japan's never going to push him the way he wants to be pushed, so maybe this is a way for him to get out. And I'm not saying that's a good idea. I'm not saying he should. I'm just saying, eh.
Yeah, I, you know, we'll see. We'll see how this goes. I just don't think that it feels too early. Like, they still value Hiromu as a junior in New Japan, but they obviously, I mean, at this point, it's pretty obvious they have no plans to ever push him as a heavy. And I think that does kind of, that there's a glass ceiling there. And I do wonder if he ends up taking kind of like a Kushida path of just doing a lot more freelancing. But yeah, I think this match could be extremely good. Now, Hiromu, while still really, really good, is not what he was before breaking his neck back several years ago. But, you know, if we had like 2017 Hiromu against 2025 Kyle Fletcher, oh, buddy, that'd be really special. But this will still be really, really good. All right, going on to the match you really want to talk about, the TBS Championship. We got Alex Windsor, Bozilla, and Persephone all challenging Mercedes Moné. I think this will be pretty good. I'm at a 7 on this. You go ahead.
10. Hoss match. Yes, I am all in on this. This sounds like my kind of wrestling. Mercedes is at her best when she is working with power. What do you got? 3 women who can throw her around. That sounds great. Now, this could also be an absolute train wreck, but I think this could be really good, and I'm really excited to see it. Like, I want the TBS title to be a Hoss title. We talked about it before. Like, you have, like, Willow, Statlander, now you got Windsor, Bozilla, and Persephone might be able to work a little bit more here and there because they have working relationships with both companies. Like, make the TBS title a Hoss title. Make it different. Make it feel special. Like, remember when the Never title was just beat the piss out of the other guy title? Yeah. Let's make the TBS title that. Like, this could be awesome. If you want to talk about an underrated match to steal the show, this could be it. Because these women will just throw bombs.
Yeah, it could be a lot of fun. I am not the biggest Persephone fan, so that is, I think to me, that's the weakest point. I'm a little concerned about that, but
I haven't watched enough of her to truly know, but I'll trust your judgment.
Just from what I've seen, she's kind of, like, she can be good, but of the four, I think she's also the weakest of them in terms of in-ring, so you'll see. I'm not saying she's bad, I'm just saying she's not, you know, not that good. But hopefully she steps up, and I think it could be very good. Now, speaking of Haas division, we got Athena challenging Toni Storm for the AEW Women's World title. I think Athena is both very good and also a bit overrated at this point. Which is to say that I think she's like a grand scale, like an 8.5 out of 10 in ring or something along those lines, maybe an 8. And I think people talk about her as like a 10, but I think it's also very modern wrestling discourse. I'm excited for this match. I'm looking forward to this much more than the TBS one, just because it's a straight singles, and I think they'll get a good 15, 20 minutes. So I'm going to go a 9 on this one. Your thoughts?
Which match?
Athena, Toni Storm.
Oh, this, I forgot this match was on the show.
Yeah.
I'm at like a 9.5.
Yeah, it rocks. It'll rock. I'm excited for this one.
Speaking of the Haas division and the TBS title, Athena.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying.
Whip ass. Take names.
Interesting to see how an Athena Bozilla match would be.
That would be fun. Please just shoot, beat each other up. Like, this women's division, especially with the possibility of like Ospreay and Swerve missing significant time, could be really, really, really cool to really just focus on building it up and these women beating each other up. Let's go. I'm excited. I'm sorry.
You know, let's talk about that for a second. Let's go off the track here. We are possibly looking at Swerve Strickland and Will Ospreay both being out for extended periods of time. Will Ospreay, I think it would be very light to say has been hinting. I think, to be more honest, he's outright said that he needs neck surgery, and it sounds like he's going to get it done right after Forbidden Door. I kind of wish he just went ahead and got it done. But and Swerve Strickland says that he has been wrestling on a torn meniscus for 6 years. Back to Tito Santana. Not great.
What was Ospreay's injury that, like, what is the surgery he's going to have?
He's going to have a neck surgery. So
that can mean a million things. I remember when Angle had his first neck surgery, he was back in like 2 months.
Well, also Angle got like a really experimental surgery that did not work out and caused a bunch of greater issues for him. So I think from what I heard Dave Meltzer talk about, without saying it outright, it sounds like he's going to be getting like a fusion surgery. So that'll be 12, 15, possibly 18 months out without Ospreay, which sucks. And you know, with Swerve, I should have looked this up before I sat down here. I think a torn meniscus surgery can take like 6 months. I think that's the right timetable.
It depends on what the surgery is. So I am a semi-expert in the meniscus, let me tell you. So there are two different types of meniscus surgeries. There's the trim and the full repair. Yes. And within the full repair, it depends on how serious the injury is. If it's like a full bucket handle, I think that's like ideal. So it's just like you basically go into the meniscus and you cut it in half and then they got to repair that. So then there's the trim, which is almost like a skin flap where like, oh, on your thumb, that little piece of skin that peels up. Well, you can just cut that off and kind of scrape around like the scar tissue and just leave it be. And you can be back in a few weeks. Problem is, because the meniscus is cartilage, you can have some issues later on in life. So if you are like 6 weeks from the Super Bowl, you just get a trim and you go back in. But if you're JJ McCarthy, the Vikings starting quarterback, he severely hurt his meniscus. They did a full repair and he was out for like 6-7 months. So it depends. I'm guessing it's more of a minor meniscus tear for Swerve than anything, and they may actually not be able to fully repair it because the longer it's like damaged, it can become unrepairable. So it'll be interesting to see how long he's out. It's going to be anywhere from like 6 weeks to like 6 to 9 months, and from that point, who knows when they'll actually bring him back, because they want to have creative. It's got to be the right time. And he could sit on the sidelines for like a month and a half just for them to wait for the right time to bring him back within their creative calendar. So it really sucks. But getting it fixed now, the fact that he was wrestling on it for 7 years almost is absurd. Just absurd.
Yeah. I mean, it, I guess you could say that that was a smart move for his career, because staying on his feet allowed him to get the push from AEW and get put through and be made a proper main eventer. Like, I think there's no way you can argue that he is anything but that at this point. But I don't know, man. That's a long time, and I do worry about the long-term implications of that, you know, on his health. Hopefully nothing dramatically bad is going to come from that, but I'm not real optimistic about that either.
Yes.
Well, since we're talking about Swerve anyway, he's got his match with Okada for the AEW Unified Championship. Love anything like Tony Khan loves renaming a belt or combining belts. I think this will be good. I think we're past the point of Okada being like one of the 5 or 10 best at worst wrestlers in the world. I think we're now at the point where he's like probably a top 50 guy. He should be on the FSM 50 this year. He should have been last year, but
so I'm going to disagree with you, but okay. I want to reframe it. I still think he's one of the 5-10 best wrestlers in the world. What? He's not giving you the five. Hold on. I think this is an important caveat with my opinion. He's not giving you one of the 5 to 10 best outputs in the world, and I think that's they're different conversations. Okay. I still think he's got it, but he's not putting it out there, and I think a lot of that has to do with what he's been given and what he's doing. And I think it's a little bit more of a booking conversation than it is he doesn't have it anymore conversation. And I think having that conversation, I think is what's the right phrasing here? I think that's the right conversation to have. I don't think he's lost it, but his outputs isn't like wrestler of the year kind of territory where it has been in so many other calendar years.
I mean,
but I don't think he's become like a worse wrestler, because the FSM 50, it's more about your output over the year than anything, right?
Well, should that not be how you evaluate a wrestler, is how good are their matches actually?
I know where you're going with this, and yes, it should be, but
okay.
I think when he can turn it on, there's only like, or when he does turn on, there's only like 5 or 10 wrestlers in the world that are better than him.
I think you could have said that in 2023. I don't agree with that right now, to be honest.
Well, you're wrong, Fred.
You're wrong. He's had a bunch of matches I've had in the like 4.5 star range, but I have not come close, I don't think, to like, this guy's had one of the best matches of the year since he went to AEW. Outside of like, looking through his list, like, yeah, I feel pretty comfortable with that, actually. No reservations. And I think that's, I used to think that it was because he wasn't motivated to do stuff with like Mark Briscoe or whatever, but truth be told, I think it's just that, you know, if I think he is a little, not a lot, but he is a little limited physically. I mean, he is 37 after working hard for a long time in New Japan. And I think it's, you know, fair to, you know, look at, you know, his list of matches in AEW, and he's faced a lot of great workers. And I would say that a lot of the time, while they delivered very good matches, they also disappointed a bit. And I think that's a fair assessment.
I get that.
I could give you 10 names that I think are better in-ring wrestlers right now, without much of a debate over Okada. You know, in terms of skill, not like, you know, going to output.
Okay.
Just saying. Just think he's taken, you know, a bit of a step back. That's all.
Anyway.
So how do you think this match will go? I mean, your takes.
You know what I think this is going to end up being? I think it's going to end up being a leg match. I'm going to hate it.
Yeah.
This coming out about Swerve.
Top 10 in the world.
Before Forbidden Door sucks, man. They're going to make this a leg match, and Okada's just going to... Whether right or wrong, and we're going to find out in time.
I think you mean whether right or left.
No, I don't.
Since it's a leg match.
Whether right or wrong here, with Okada really trying to be an American heel and trying to strip everything away that people like so that they will just hate him more. And I think doing a straight up leg match is going to be another one of those elements. So if they do a leg match, I think that's why. And I wonder if they leaked this out to Fightful to get it reported. So if they can do a leg match, so Okada can draw more heat. Maybe I'm just overthinking things. Let's be real. It's pro wrestling. We always are.
Quick note. You know, it is not a, it's not a ghetto book company. So I don't know if the desire for more heat is that present.
Yeah. Plus, how is Don Callis going to get involved? That's going to be fun too.
Probably just his normal, like, oh, I'll get a few cheap shots in, but it's not going to be that bad kind of stuff. That's my guess. All right. So my dry humor is working great so far. All right. Coming up next, we got two more matches. One is for the World Tag Team Championship. We got Brodito and FTR challenging the Hurt Syndicate. Now, this is an elimination match, which I missed at first. I was getting ready to say, you know, not being the allegations, Hurt Business or Hurt Syndicate. But given the fact that there are going to be apparently two falls in this match, unless there is a double DQ or something really dumb like that, which I won't rule out. I think that if the Hurt Syndicate were to retain by Brodito and FTR doing a double countout or double DQ, I think I might just like, they're holding those belts hostage. Like, fully on board with the speculation.
When I first found out that this was a three-way match, I'm like, fuck you guys.
Yeah.
This sucks. But making an elimination match piques my interest a little bit. It's like, I'm fine with it. You know what I think is going to happen? Brodito is going to be pinned by Bobby Lashley, and then FTR is going to screw over Shelton Benjamin and pin him. I think that's what's going to end up happening.
Yeah, they need to get the belts on FTR. They're just doing fantastic work.
And it's also interesting that because they're turning on MJF and they kicked him out, that they're kind of in this tweener spot right now where you could have them be heels on the first fall and then baby faces on the second. And I think that could work, and it could keep them in their same spot. So this could be a vehicle to not really turn them face or keep them heel, but to just keep them in this ambiguous like zone that they're in. Keep their aura the same. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Makes sense to me. I think this could be a fun match. I think there's a good question here. How do the Hurt Syndicate work this? Are they working hard? I mean, you know, they for a long time did have the streak of having the worst matches on every AEW pay-per-view.
But now they're in the ring with like four really good workers.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I'm not super optimistic still. You know, I guess we'll see if they can buck that trend. I could also see this checking in at like, it was a good 3.75, but also to just do that with Brodito and FTR is kind of a disappointment. So
the one thing that I think they deserve a little bit more credit or a little bit of a break on, I guess is probably the better way to frame it. Their poor outputs have not come against like these great workers. You know what I mean? Like Jet Speed, like Kevin Knight's still hit and miss because he's relatively on the greener side and he's still growing and developing. There's a lot there, but there's work to be done. And Speedball, good wrestler, but I feel like there was a little bit of a chemistry thing between the two teams. Like, and before that, like, we're not talking about them going out and facing the Young Bucks. They had arguably the weakest match on paper on those shows, and they gave you the weakest output. So how much blame do they really deserve for these quote-unquote poor outputs? They still just need to shoulder some of it, but how much of it is due to the booking and the opponent that they had? I don't think that's been talked about at all, and I think it should at least be mentioned, because if you are going up against Will Ospreay and Swerve Strickland and you put on a 3.25 star match, it's your fault. But that's not what's happening here. So I'm very intrigued to see them go up against one of the best tag teams of this generation in FTR and a couple of really good, young, fascinating wrestlers who have developed a really nice rapport in their short time tag teaming in Bodito and Brody King. I said Bodito. I got Bandito and Bozilla mixed up in my head. Oh my gosh, I need a nap. You know what I mean? Like, I think we've been putting too much onus on the fact that their matches haven't been as good as they should be, when I think there are other factors that have not been mentioned nearly as much as they should. Well, they still deserve blame. I'm just saying,
yeah,
maybe we should ease a little bit of that blame. It's not all on them.
Like, I'm not saying that they suck, but, you know, I think that it is fair to say.
You're 100% saying they suck, Fred. It's okay.
I'm not saying they suck. Look, trust me, there's not many wrestlers in AEW that outright suck. They're just like, we top out at like 3.5 stars. Kind of act.
And there's room on the card for those matches, but for sure, a promotion that has always prioritized tag team wrestling, and I use that in air quotes, that's not good enough. So
I would actually argue that one of their big issues is they don't emphasize.
No. That is the issue. But when this promotion started, that one of the objectives was to make tag team wrestling like main event worthy. I don't think they've had a single pay-per-view main event that's been a tag match other than Anarchy in the Arena, and that doesn't count. A 2v2 tag has never main evented an AEW pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And that was like a big goal of the start of the company. So that's why I kind of used that in air quotes. It was supposed to be a focus, and they just kind of lost it.
Well, that leaves us with the main event of the Lights Out Steel Cage match between the Death Riders of Claudio and Moxley and the Young Bucks and Gabe Kidd, who missed most of the G1 with a knee injury, against the Golden Lovers, so Omega and Kota Ibushi, Darby Allin, Hiroshi Tanahashi, and Will Ospreay. And I will note that the babyface side has two guys, or a guy that can't move in Hiroshi, a guy that previously was not able to move and then looked like he could move at least a little bit when he returned, and Kota Ibushi, and rocking out Tyler Fornis over here, and Will Ospreay, who needs major neck surgery, and also Gabe Kidd, who had that knee injury. So the walking wounded here. I don't know. It's going to be, we'll say, interesting. I am curious to see how this goes. This, I think there is a somewhere between 1% and 5% chance this could actually be something of a disaster.
I'm so fascinated to see Hiroshi Tanahashi in a cage match.
I am kind of afraid of that, because remember the ladder match with Kenta. I think you can probably draw a straight line between that and his sudden physical decline.
Yeah. It's fascinating, though. And that's what I mean. Like,
yeah, it's really interesting.
I want to see it. And Darby is going to jump off of the top of the cage. If Tanahashi can get there, he's doing a high fly flow off the top of the cage. Are you kidding?
No, he should not.
Should not, but you know he's going to try.
I truly cannot emphasize this enough. My God, I hope he does not.
Yeah,
it's, I really do not want that to happen.
Look, it's Hiroshi Tanahashi, the ace of the universe. He's going to do it. I think this could be really interesting because you have a lot of different storylines kind of convoluting into one. I think we're going to end up getting is Young Bucks versus Golden Lovers, maybe at All Out. Moxley Darby, probably an All Out match. It's just really interesting. Have they announced Tanahashi's final Canada match yet?
I'm not sure that they have.
Because he's already done a match in Chicago. That was his last match. This is his last match in the UK. I wonder if they're going to have him in an all-out match. You know what rule? And I don't know if they'll do it, but he's already getting such nuclear heat. What better way for Tanahashi's last match than to be against Wheeler Yuta and Yuta beats him in the middle of the ring? Clean. You know what I mean?
Oh, man, I don't know about that one. I think that there's going to be some people very angry about that. They like New Japan a lot. I wonder if they would be more or less offended than Tanahashi giving the high fly flow to notably not in New Japan, Yuki Yoshioka. I like Yuta. I would not do that. I'll say that.
Well, you're going to push him. He's getting the right kind of heat. So amplifying that could be good. But then again, he's kind of just become the pin eater for the Death Riders, so I could also understand it. I'm just kind of spitballing. I think we're getting a Tanahashi match at All Out. That's my vibe.
Okay. Well, hopefully it's a tag of some sort because, again, Tana is not.
He can at least bend his knees enough to do the fake air guitar and throw it.
Yeah.
Like, you can make stuff happen. He's still got a brain for the business. So that's good enough by me.
Fair enough. And that's the card. Anything else you want to talk about with regards to this card? You want to talk about Jericho's rumored exit?
It'll suck, but it's probably the right time. It was probably the right time a little while ago. Last match even. Was it Hook?
It might have been. I would have liked to have seen him. I would like to see him get a proper send-off. Just because of how big of a role he's been, I'd like him to not be in the Tony Khan bench zone.
Yeah.
His final match was actually losing the world title, the Ring of Honor world title to Bandido.
That's a good way to go out of the company.
It is.
Oh yeah. That mask match crap. Oh, mm-hmm. I hated that.
Yeah,
it really was did.
Not great. Yeah, I think maybe even just doing an angle where like the whole Brian Keith Big Bill thing is blown off. Might be worthwhile.
I just thought he was off to kind of get him off TV for a little bit and like kind of refresh it because he's taken like a couple months to do a quick Fozzy tour here and there, but otherwise he's been constant on TV since Dynamite started 6 years ago.
Yeah. This has been his first real cinematic off, I believe.
That's a problem because you have to give the fans a reason to miss you. If you're always around, they can't miss you. And I think there's burnout from the fan base, but I do think you could still do more with him, but how high are you going to be willing to push him up the card? I don't think that high. Honestly, did we ever get Jericho Okada in New Japan? I don't think we did.
Did we? I don't know that we did.
We got Jericho Naito. We got Jericho Tanahashi.
I don't think I want to see that in 2025.
No, but you know what it would be? Hey, we're going to run a big TV building, and we're going to do Jericho Okada in the main event. They did?
The main event 2019.
Okay.
I forgot.
Never mind then. That there's no real appeal to considering that they've already done it. I had forgotten about that match because I knew that like the whole idea was Jericho was just feuding with all the big names in New Japan. But oh yeah, didn't like Okada pin him with like by using the trunks or something?
I'm not sure at this point.
I'm not either. But that could have been where you run a basketball arena and you build that as the main event, and I bet you could draw. I'm not talking like Rupp Arena where you could put 22,000 in there. I'm talking like 15,000 seater. I bet you could put a 10,000-11,000 in there for like a first time Jericho Okada match.
Yeah.
I bet that in the right market you could do it, but it's already happened, so it's a moot point.
Yeah, Jericho wrestled all the big stars from New Japan in his little run there. Kenny Omega, Tetsuya Naito, Okada, Tanahashi, and of course G1 finalist Evil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All the big stars. All the biggest stars.
Evil. That Evil match was funny too. That was before the turn. But that was just a... He only did that to fuck with Naito. So... Yeah. Otherwise, I don't really have much else to talk about. How this show ends up going, I think, is going to tell us a lot about where AEW is headed.
Yeah. And the vibes got real bad pretty quick the past week. So with the injury reports and the what I think was pretty bad booking, I am negative right now on the, you know, I was thinking even a month ago after the Texas show that they were in a very promising spot. And I think now I have concerns. We'll see how the booking plays out on Forbidden Door, but between all the questionable decisions in some of the big matches and also just doing Forbidden Door without like five people from outside the company, it's pretty lame. It's not good. It sucks.
I agree.
Frankly, at this point, if that's what they're going to do, they should just bench the concept. You know, put in the Jericho zone for a while.
Yeah.
Next to Wardlow. Covered in mothballs.
It's just not the same right now. We've seen so much crossover with these companies to where, honestly, I think you should do another Forbidden Door, but I think you should do it in Mexico and do a pay-per-view and do a real big like crossover. Like that would have been a perfect spot for MJF Mystico. That would have been like, you'd be a great spot where you have like Atlantis Jr. Like, think about like Atlantis Jr. against like Will Ospreay. Like, just do a super show, like an AEW versus CMLL Forbidden Door card, where it's just like 9 singles matches and it's just like a tournament. Who wins?
Mm-hmm.
That'd be fun as hell.
Shame we ain't doing that right now. All right. Well, I think I'm good. I think that's it for me. Anything else you want to add before we head out?
No. Sorry, we aren't as regular as we should be with these shows. Football is consuming my life, but it's also my job, so that's kind of okay.
I'm just glad you were able to finish the day or finish the show today.
Hey, yeah, because Adam Thielen's about to be traded to the Vikings, and I was about to have to pop off and do a bunch of work. So now that I'm going to go make myself some lunch, the second I start making lunch, it's going to happen.
All right, y'all. Y'all take care. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you after the pay-per-view.
Boom.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network listeners. I am Jeff Hawkins, co-host of Shake Them Ropes, with a very special announcement. If it's been a while or you've never listened to us before, the original gang is back. Myself and Rob McCarron, back talking wrestling. We have no idea where this show's going to go, where we're going to keep any of the old bits or any of the old things in there. It's going to be a process. It's going to be a journey, and we'd like for you to come along with us. Only on Shake Them Ropes on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.